Hey friends, I'm Naomi, and I'm glad to have you here listening to A Creative Purpose. This space is here to encourage and support creatives bring their ideas to life. I believe we each have our own brilliance to share with the world, and when we lean into that, we have opportunities to live an adventurous life. I have some great conversations with other creatives where they share their journey and the lessons learned along the way. I'll also share my story and what I've learned and am learning on this beautiful, sometimes difficult road to living a life I love. Welcome back, friends, to another episode of A Creative Purpose with Naomi, and I am excited to talk to Pearlianne today. We recently got connected on a Facebook podcast group, and when I saw that she was in Thailand, I was like, I got to get her on and just kind of talk about what she's doing down in Koh Lanta. So welcome, Pearlianne, and can you please introduce yourself?
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm Pearlianne Friedman. I'm an expat living on Koh Lanta in southern Thailand, a tiny little island too removed from the mainland. And I'm happy and I'm living my life to the best I can. And that sounds kind of corny, but I really believe in being positive and looking for opportunities and being open to change. And that brought this high-tech, heavy career, serious career person like me to live way out there. I couldn't be happier, and I'm free in the sense that I don't have boundaries. I love to write. I can write there. I love creating things with my hands. Sounds funny, but on Lanta, there's so much inspiration and so much opportunity that I feel I'm thriving, and I'm 68. I'm not a young kitten anymore, but I feel it. My message to people is to see what I've done and the things that I've overcome, and that you can do it. You can live your dreams. And I love talking about it. Ask away.
Well, thank you so much. That's awesome. So can we dive into the writing, and then we'll get to the making things with your hands. So can you tell me more about your writing process? What is it that you like to write, and what inspires you? Have you always been a writer?
I've always been a writer, and I think it's my mother, and I've dedicated the opening of all my books to my mother, because when I was a little girl, I'm an only child, and we traveled a lot, and the way to engage me on long flights and long car rides is to write about what I saw or write about what I did the day before. And in a way, it holds me back, because while I want to write mysteries and dystopian works, like really crazy new environments, I just can't. I need to write about reality. And I've always written about reality. In my technical career, oh, I can write about any spec. I can write about any business process. I can describe the functioning of a huge corporation. But can I talk about the mystery that's happening in the mailroom? Not really, unless it's real. So my inspiration is life. And that's what I'm writing about. And the life I know is my life. So I write about my life, or the life of people around me, or of where I am. Hence, awesome. My recent book, I have to put my plug in, It's Retired Way Out There, My Evolving Life on Koh Lanta, Thailand. And it's a story of my last 20 years, how I found Koh Lanta, how I slowly transitioned from a visitor to a local expat. And I'm proud. I'm very proud to tell my story, to inspire other people to look for opportunities, because life happens and we can't predict the future, but we can kind of figure it out and look for the best future for ourselves.
That's amazing. So you said books. So that was your latest one. What else have you written about?
Well, you know, sounds kind of weird, but I'm a cat lover. Totally love cats. I don't have a cat on my t-shirt, or I don't have cat tattoos, but I'm passionate about cats. And my home on Koh Lanta is called Happy Cat Villa, because I'm a happy cat. So it's my house. It's Happy Cat Villa. When I first started settling into Koh Lanta, I was friends with a woman who started an animal rescue charity there. And when we got the house and I was there long-term and permanently, she asked me if I could help her. They weren't doing well. It's hard to get donations on a tourist island in low season. And she needed to up the notch a bit. I call it maybe a very grassroots charity. And I started working with her using my business knowledge to figure out how to raise money. And I raised a lot of money. And now I'm so proud. Lant Animal Welfare has maybe 25 employees. It's got a huge medical staff. It's got mobile clinics, mobile sterilization clinics that go to surrounding islands and on the mainland. We get donations from major European charities, not necessarily new information about business, but new information about nonprofits. And I have a really good understanding of nonprofits and how people can help, not millionaires and people donating money, but just you and I, everyday people. So I wrote a book called Volunteer Fundraising Simplified. So how anybody at any time with a little effort or a lot of effort can help a charity. And a lot of it was prompted by my age. I had this opportunity to help a charity with my core competencies, which is rare, because when older people go to a charity or anybody and says, I'd like to volunteer, they put you on the door ticking off names, or they ask you to stuff envelopes, or they ask you to do something. And while you know you're helping, you still feel underutilized. So Lant Animal Welfare respected my background and let me do what I do best. So I thought, other people need to be able to do that. You and I, anybody, go to a charity and say, hey, I'm a builder, I want to help. And not be told to take an entrance fee, but to write a spec for a new addition, or to manage the build of something 2 hours a day, or something like that. And how people can raise money alone or have an event, or the book has got lots of meat in it. So that was my first major publication, as opposed to all my magazine articles and my thesis from university, things like that. So.
Okay, that's awesome. I love that you thought beyond like the regular kind of things that people could have you do. And so that's awesome that you took your talents and your experience to write stuff for other people to help them out and to show that there is a way forward. That's so cool. How long does it usually take you to like write a book? Is that quite a process, or do you think about it for a few years and then sit down and really write it out? What does that look like for you?
It's a really funny question, because to write a book, it's you need to plan it. You need to plan the book and you need to devote time to it. So I could probably write the book. Now that's write and draft in maybe 3 or 4 months, dedicating 2 or 3 hours every morning after it's sort of planned out. The challenge is once it's written to edit and reread it and change it and edit and edit and give it to other people to review it. Because when you're reading it, when you write in and you read it, you don't necessarily see what's there. You see what you think is there. And then when somebody else reads it, they go, hey, it's great that you were doing something, but how did you get there? Or did you have the skill to do it? And you think, okay, I better put that in. I tell people, give yourself a year to go from concept to final draft, devoting a few hours every day, maybe one day off, to the book. And if you can't do that, then you're looking at years and years. The caution I give people is if you're going to take years and years to write it, chances are your plan will change. And if you start deviating from your plan, then you might have to go back to square one. Because if your heroine is in Thailand, but you have them going on a trip to London, and then they end up in Paris, well, was that in your plan? How are they getting back? And how is it relevant? and who do they know and who did they meet? And meeting somebody in England, if that person isn't influencing their life in Thailand, why did you do that? So it can get really difficult.
Yeah.
And maybe that's why I write nonfiction, because I can look at life and know how things are relevant and how it all joins.
Because I looked on your Instagram and I saw that you're creating. Can you tell me where that came from, where the inspiration started, what that's looked like to build out what you're building right now?
On Koh Lanta, the little tiny island. And the idea of small isn't small like Manhattan or Trinidad or anything like that. It's small, like 30 kilometers long and maybe 10 kilometers wide in only a few places. It's a very small island. And it's sitting in the Andaman Sea. And if I go way out to sea, there's the Indian Ocean and the Pacific Ocean. In the summer months, the winds change and they blow inwards, and the winds are very strong. It's the water is too rough to swim in. It's just not the tourist season. It's low season. You can't go out in dive boats because the water is just too rough. The coral reefs are not clear. So it's a very different environment. And as an expat, I'm there all seasons. And the garbage that comes up onto the beach is unbelievable. As soon as the winds change, end of April, May, truly, I'm not biased, are covered in garbage. So the locals go out and collect the garbage on our own. I love walking the beach every day. I bring a big garbage bag. You look at the garbage and you think, where did it come from? Well, it came from way out there somewhere, out in the ocean. It's not garbage people on Koh Lanta have thrown away. It's garbage from the world. And the amount of garbage every day that comes, and even after we clean the beach, there's more garbage. It's never ending. You realize how much garbage is out there in the ocean. And it's truly unbelievable. Like, I can't imagine a garbage island bigger than Texas, and there's more than one. So it's something that really makes you feel tiny, really tiny. And I want to make a difference. So every day I go out there with a big garbage bag and collect the garbage and leave it for the garbage pickup. And sometimes the garbage pickup happens once a week, and there's tons of garbage around all these bins. And there's a couple of groups, charity groups, that organize cleanups on the different beaches once a week or once a month. And they clean the beach completely. It's all volunteer, and it's wonderful. But the next day, the garbage is back. So I'm doing my little thing, and I love color. And most of the garbage is void of color because it's been out in the sea so long. But lighters, you think lighters, but so many people don't smoke anymore. True, but they did smoke for years, and the lighters are in the sea and they come up. And I love turquoise and purples, and some of the golds of these lighters are amazing. You know, I'm talking about little plastic lighters, Bics or whatever. So I started collecting them along with the other garbage. And then I started thinking, wait, there's still gas in these lighters. They're going to explode in the hot sun because it's hot. It's 40 degrees, 38 degrees in the blazing sun. So I started collecting only lighters. And then I was at a party one night and saw a sculpture that a friend had done of a seahorse with lighters. And he had Christmas lights behind them. It wasn't that big, but I thought that's so cool. Like what you see at a hippie bar. Yes, it's like a hippie bar. And I thought, but it's small and it won't last very long and it'll probably crack. And the Christmas lights cost maybe 50 baht or like $1 US. And they're not going to last very long. And I'm not going to make something that isn't going to last. But of course, I want to make a cat because I love cats. He helped me with some of his buddies. We cut out a frame. They figured out how to put the lights in so that you could take the lighters off the frame, and it's all, they had a good time. I had a good time. It took me 2 months to build this giant cat. It's now hanging on the side of my house at the entranceway It's wonderful. And other people saw it and said, oh, can you build me something for my restaurant, or can you build me something for my shop? And this just continued. Now there is a huge fat turtle at a beach restaurant, which is a fabulous beach restaurant, of course, called The Fat Turtle. There's a cat not lit in a playground in Lanta Old Town in the south of the island. There's a humongous 2 meter high dinosaur eating popcorn hanging at Lanta Cinema movie theater. And I have a couple more that I'll be making shortly. And it came out of nowhere other than, or the idea came out of, I want to make a little tiny wee dent in the garbage. And it might be nothing, but it's something. And maybe it'll inspire other people. And it did. People bring me lighters now. People show up at my place and say, can I see your workshop? I even got an invitation from the Provincial Ministry of Arts to display two of my pieces at a modern art exhibition that was televised. And all of this came out of me wanting to do something with the garbage. So You never know when something will happen and you feel something, do it. See where it'll take you. And if it takes you nowhere, so what? If it takes you somewhere, bonus.
That's so awesome. Because I've walked these beaches and I'm always looking at the trash and always trying to figure out like, how can this be reused? And we know like fishing nets are so many, and just like bottles, flip-flops. It's amazing what you find washed up. And so just that you can find little lighters enough to create these beautiful works of art.
And the cleaning process takes 3 days, and I can do maybe 500 at a time, because not only do I soak it in Javex for a day, then I wash them twice, let them soak in soapy water. And then I have to break the tops off and pull the innards out. So it's a huge process. So it takes months and months to create these huge statues or sculptures. But people seeing it, they're aware of the problem. Mm-hmm. So, even a tourist coming to the island that doesn't think about the garbage, when they see this, it doesn't put a damper on their vacation. It makes them aware of the planet and how important it is to do what you can, whether it's bringing your own bag to the grocery store or making sure you throw away that empty bottle in a recycle bin. Mm-hmm. Just the tiny little things. And we all need to do what we can, not telling people to do it, but just do what you can, what inspires you. And hopefully we can move away from the mess in the ocean.
It's overwhelming for sure. And, it is the collective little things that we can do that make the big impact, So it's like, if we're feeling like it's just so overwhelming and then we don't do anything, it's like, just bring it down and just do the one thing that you can do consistently to cut back on stuff, I think is helpful.
Yeah. And the other thing I'm making, I always have to pitch Land Animal Welfare. The animals there are rescued from horrible situations, and they're rescued because they need medical care. And then some are put back where they were found if it's safe, and others stay at the center and are adopted by the tourists. But an animal might be at the center for months and months, and there isn't much for them to do. They go for walks and they have their run around area, but there's no toys. Like, playtime is when the volunteers are with them in their area. So I started making animal toys. And I say animal because cats can use them too. And I did it with discarded fabric. And I started making them so the animals had something to play with. And just a lot of braiding and macrame knots and different things. And they kind of look like octopuses. Two or three-legged octopus. Some of the tourists were saying, oh, those toys are great. Where can I buy them? So I make them for the shop, and they sell like hotcakes. I don't sell them for very much, but I use discarded fabric, whether it's bedding or t-shirts. And people are always donating their unwanted clothing to the center, to the charity, when they leave. So a tourist comes, gets a bunch of t-shirts, and when they go back home, they don't want these t-shirts, so they leave them. So just something like that. Animals inspired me. Animals mm-hmm. needing something to do. So that came out of absolutely nowhere, other than the dog and the cat have a need, they're bored, play, toys. Sure, you can buy animal toys and they cost a fortune. And if they're made of rope, that's no good. The rope ends up in bits down their throat. Plastic isn't good because there's enough plastic on the planet already. And I was like, there's so much fabric garbage, landfills of fabric garbage. And I thought, yeah, look at all these bags that were donated today. We have to put them in this storage room that's full of other bags of t-shirts. And do we throw them away? Nobody wants them. Well, I'll make animal toys. And that's been going on about a year. And I sell maybe 10 or 20 a month at the shop. Pure donation to the shop. I get to do something with my hands while I'm doing something else. It's good for everybody, especially for the animal.
Yeah.
And the cat. You know, yeah. I want to save every cat on the planet. So.
Yeah, definitely.
That's how I look at it. Even though my little dent, it's not meaningless. It might be tiny, but if I make an animal feel good, it's worth it. I've sold a couple of hundred of these toys. There's these happy animals. Like, what could be better?
Yeah, so with tourism in Kalanta, do you find that you're getting tourists to come and help, or like, is there any ideas of expanding it so you get more hands-on help with things, or do you kind of want to keep it small? What are your thoughts on all that?
My thoughts are to make it the biggest charity on the planet, save all the cats and dogs in mm-hmm. the world. It's crazy. Right now, the island is recovering from COVID. With tourism shut down almost 3 years ago and no tourists coming, the impact on poor little Koh Lanta was devastating. So many businesses closed permanently. So many places were abandoned because without tourism, there's no money. And with no money, somebody can't maintain their bungalow place or their restaurant. And the charity was hit really hard because without tourists, nobody's buying swag from the shop. Nobody's touring the center to see the good work going on. Donations on site turned to zero. We're advertising with a couple of volunteer organizations throughout Europe and North America for volunteers. We give volunteers a place to stay, breakfast, the community of volunteers from around the world. So it's a great opportunity for anybody of any age. The best volunteers are people in their later years who can take 2 or 3 months vacation and come and help and live on site and meet others, like-minded people who are also living on site. And we've built very nice facilities for the volunteers. So hopefully we'll be back up to maybe 15 volunteers by this Christmas. That means that we're going to lose our local Thai staff who have been volunteering, but that's okay because we're already getting some applications to volunteer. Once high season hits, there'll be tourism and people will be touring the facility and seeing the animals that we have. Our adoptions will go up. We'll get on-site donations. So we're really positive about this coming season. And high season has been rough. And we did have a bit of a nest egg that we've been using, our emergency money that we've had to use. But, mm-hmm. you know, it was an emergency. COVID was an emergency, not just people getting sick, but the lack of opportunity for charities and tourist-dependent mm-hmm. organizations. So.
Yeah.
So it's full steam ahead with being positive.
Good thing things are looking up. And I mean, I see more tourists here in Bangkok, so I know they'll be trickling down that way as well. So that's exciting for the communities that have been really hard with COVID here. I'm curious about just your expat life and how that happened, what made you stay in Thailand? What made you pick Koh Lanta? Like, what can you share more of that story?
So when I was a little girl, again, my mother, because I'm an only child, she always tried to encourage me to do things I didn't like making your bed, little things. And she'd always say, look for the carrot at the end, and the carrot, and I'm a carrot top. And what does that mean? And she said, look for some bonus or benefit that you will get from doing something. So I thought, that's cool. I'll have a treat, or I'll be able to watch a TV show I like, or whatever it was. And that grew bigger. And school, didn't really like school, loved math, but didn't like the sciences. And I was always giving myself a bonus. When I realized, maybe in my early teens, that as a woman, I finish school and I get married and have kids, or maybe I want a career, I go to university, or I try and combine them. And I thought, what do I really want? Well, I want a career. I love math. I love writing. I love doing that. So I want to do that. And then I thought, but work is hard, and I do it for how many decades? Okay, I'll do it as long as I can retire on a tropical island. And, you know, hearing this 12-year-old say that, yes, dear, but it stuck with me. And it was always in my mind that one day I will live on a tropical island. Didn't make sense. I'm in high tech. I'm working really hard. I live in, you know, I'm in Ottawa, Canada. The winters are 40 below zero. Long story short, I worked a few years in Hong Kong. And when I came back to Canada, I decided I couldn't handle the cold. And every winter I would take 2 or 3 months and travel around Asia. Maybe I'll get inspired and find my retirement island. And the first time I was in Koh Lanta, I went for 2 nights on the way back to Canada after a 6-week holiday. And I love Koh Lanta. And I'm not going to give away my book, because some stuff that is very difficult also happened in that time frame. But I went to Koh Lanta for 2 nights. Because the third night I was supposed to be on a plane back to Canada, and I stayed 6 weeks. And it was really hard to leave after 6 weeks, but my job was on the line. My partner's job was on the line. My family thought I was totally off the deep end. Like, you're supposed to have been home 2 months ago. What is going on? Are you okay? You're in the middle of nowhere. Are you okay? And I'm going, Mommy, don't worry about me. I'm going to live here one day. And it's like, yeah. 20 years ago, that happened. And now I have a beautiful home on Koh Lanta. And I love my life. I totally love my life. And anytime there's something that is happening that I don't like, I figure it out. That might sound weird, but as we age, we have issues with friends who aren't doing well. We have to think of our finances. We have to think of our health. We have to think of the world situation, COVID, things like that. You know, COVID hit Koh Lanta, and I'd been sick just before it became something, and I'm positive I had COVID. I was sick for about 6 weeks. It felt like dengue fever for anybody who's had it. It was very similar to dengue, but my lungs were congested, which is different. Dengue is not a cold. It's definitely a flu. It was very similar. I slept most of the time. By the time I recovered, they started showing things on television. I was like, oh my goodness, whatever. I'm better now. We're in Thailand. My partner came for 3 months to spend the winter with me. And during that time, they started locking down the country. And we decided to stay through the lockdown because we figured, oh, it'll be a month, 2 months. It was 2.5 years. Not the full time we were locked down. We were locked down about a year, even as strict as not being able to, not just not off our island, but they divided the island into quadrants, and we couldn't leave our quadrant unless we had a good reason. And they had police barriers up. So if you had to go to the next quadrant for a reason, you had to explain it, you had to show proof of it, and you were given a time frame to come back. And it all sounds so, wow, that's crazy. But, you know, I'm pretty happy because there was no COVID in Thailand until they started opening it up to the tourists like a year and a half later. We all wore masks and we wanted to wear masks. We all obeyed the rules and the laws, not because we're sheep or subservient or whatever bad connotation. It's because we didn't want to get sick and we didn't want our friends and neighbors to get sick. Mm-hmm. And a lot of us are in our 50s, 60s, 70s. But it wasn't just we didn't want each other to get sick. I'm a Westerner. I'm a big girl. I'm strong. I'm healthy. But when I look at some of the Thais, especially the older people, they're so frail. I don't want them to get sick. I don't want this country I love to suffer with people dying and ill. And so it was a voluntary thing that we all did because we all wanted to stay healthy. Mm-hmm. So it's just COVID was strange. But I stayed and I'm glad I stayed because I was ultra creative. I met a lot of people that I wouldn't have met because with tourism, people are busy, they're working. Yeah. I met other people who'd been on the island 20 years like I have, and I hadn't met them before. It's mind-boggling. We probably passed on the road or we were at the same beach at a different spot, but to meet so many great people with similar, like-minded, retired professionals. They're into some kind of creativity, whether it's making jewelry or art out of branches or building houses out of bamboo or all of these amazing people that I met. So COVID was a good time for me emotionally, intellectually, was not a good time for the planet.
It has been interesting just being in Thailand through all this and then seeing how other countries deal with it and all that. So like you said, trying to see the good that did come out of it, meeting your community members more. And so do you find, like, given that opportunity to meet and talk with other creatives in the community, are you guys moving forward with any new initiatives or things like as Kolanta opens up again and how you can support the community as you all move forward together?
There's a new group that has just started to help clean up the beaches and to help the community by offering bags of rice to Thais that help clean up. And nice. Years ago, it was only expats and tourists that helped clean the beaches. Of course, the resorts clean the beaches, the beach in front of their resort. But with COVID and all the resorts shut down because everything had to shut down, the garbage pileup was almost too much for the few expats that were still there. So a Dutch woman partnered with, it might be a Swedish organization, I'm not exactly sure, and got donations for the big bags of rice. So when the Thais participate in these cleanups, they get a big bag of rice. And that's like giving them a month's salary or 2 weeks salary to a family. So there's lots of participation of combination teams from the expat community and the Thai community. And I think, I don't want to say every expat, every foreigner who's living on Lanta, but I would say at least 90% of us now have good friends in the Thai community. And it's like it opened up this melting pot where we could all work together, which has been terrific because meeting Thais with the language barrier, even though we all learn our Thai, as I'm sure you've learned, you know, I know how to get along in the market. I'm always smiling and doing whatever I can to respect them. It's still very difficult to be friends with them. It's opened up the opportunity to interact more.
Yeah, and my Thai is not good.
My Thai is terrible, but I try.
Yeah.
And I think they respect me for that. And I can read it. But I don't say it very well. So sometimes if we're having trouble, if I want to buy something and I don't know how to say it properly, I'll write it down. And they're amazed. Like, I might not be able to say somtam, mm-hmm. that's a little salad thing. I might not be able to say it well, but I can write it. And then I can even tell them if I want it spicy or not. You know, I write it down. So it's kind of funny. I always think I should learn sign language in Thai because I don't have to worry about the tones, because it's between the tones and the accents. I don't know how anybody does it. I do know expats that have done it because they have a Thai partner maybe, and they hear it every day, all day. They get better. But, you know, if you try, it endears them to you because they respect you. You're trying, mm-hmm. even though I have no idea. You know, they have no idea what I'm saying. They know I'm really trying, and I'm showing that I want to be their friend or I want to work with them. So there's a lot of relationships that have built, and a lot of business relationships that have built, and a lot of supporting each other. And I think that's wonderful because I am a foreigner in a strange land, in a different land. I'm a visitor and I want to contribute as much as I can because it is my home too. Mm-hmm. So if I can have somebody, if I can work with somebody to achieve a goal, then it's great. And if that somebody is Thai, it's even better for me. They make great sweets. Oh my God, they're desserts. Oh.
Yeah.
Love the dessert.
Yeah. They got some good food here to enjoy. So that's what I love. Yeah. That's so good. As we kind of wrap up here, is there anything else that you'd like to share with others that are creative and maybe sitting on an idea? I don't know, just any other lessons that you've learned along the way that you want to share with us?
So again, this is going to sound really corny, but I am proof that don't let obstacles make something impossible. Look for the possible. So no matter what it is you want to do, try and get partway there, but plan it out. I want to be a millionaire. That's absolutely ridiculous. I want to be rich. Okay, what's your plan? Have a plan and figure out a logical plan, not, okay, I'm going to work and I'll be rich. That's not a plan. Mm-hmm. You have to figure out you're going to work. Are you going to save money? What kind of work are you going to do? Are you going to do something you like so that you can continue doing it? So if it takes you weeks and months to put together a plan, put it together, because then you've got the steps to take. And along the way, you might have to modify the steps. So don't give up, but be strategic. Mm-hmm. And something will come. I've got lots of ideas in the works. I'm putting some plans together. It might be a new book. It might be a podcast. Like, I've got a lot of ideas, and I think about it. I go for long walks, and they're strategic. I'm not just out there going, oh, this is boring. I'm thinking, okay, if I can get from A to B, how do I get from B to F? Mm-hmm. I know once I get to F, I'm okay, but how do I get there? Keep thinking, and think crazy. Think anything, because ideas will come to your head. Don't sit there and feel sorry for yourself. Do something about it. Be happy. Life mm-hmm. is good. We're here. We have the opportunity to make our life better and maybe for others around us.
That's really good advice and wisdom to share with us as we just kind of journey on. And we know life is hard sometimes, and we process through it and get back up again and move forward. So I appreciate that insight from you. Good. If people wanted to connect with you, where do you like to hang out? On socials or email? Or
my email is great. I respond to my email. I will respond to everybody. My website, pearlianne.com, is my writer's website, and it has links to my article website and just general information about me. I love putting up photos, and I tell everybody what I'm working on. Sometimes there's a lot of interaction, and you'll see me in there. I don't ignore people's comments. And if they're saying something, I go, this is great, or congratulations. I always thank people. And I love connecting with people. Everybody should think of what their dreams are, figure out your dreams and work towards getting them. And if you don't get there, at least you try.
Yeah.
You know, and that's it. It's good. You're trying.
Yeah. Cause it's more of the process, yeah, you know, than the final destination. And we never know what that's going to look like. Cause there's always something more to explore and do and try. And so, yeah, I love that. Well, thank you so much. And I hope some people will put a trip to Thailand on their calendars and come visit you. And I hope I can still make it down there one of these days and see your artwork. And if you're back in town, meet you and just kind of see what's happening down there. So thank you so much for your time.
And thank you for having me.
I can't thank you enough for listening to these podcast episodes and supporting the work that I'm doing here. If you can think of anybody that could benefit from the conversation I just had, please go ahead and forward that to them. If you are on Apple Podcasts, a review would be much appreciated, or a follow on Spotify is how I can continue to get the word out about the work that I'm doing here. If you would like more support and encouragement throughout your week, you can find me on Instagram at A Creative Purpose. And I would also like to drop into your email box with some more insights and encouragement throughout your weeks. And you can do that at naomigeidel.com. Until next time, go serve the world as only you can.